This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this Wednesday, January 14th edition of Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, and I have with me today Justin Klein.
Always great to be here with you, Steve. It's rare that we get together.
Yeah.
It makes for a good show, I think.
I do like it when we do the show together. We're here to be a source of current investing information, but more importantly, try to give you some perspective, on your money decisions. Try to help you with some of those. Try to educate you on what kind of money decisions you should be making. And we're heard every day on the radio, as you know, 4 to 5 live Pacific time. Also online at investtalk.com. And we're downloaded all over the place for our podcast listeners. So you can hear us and listen to the show anytime you want. It's a free subscription on iTunes or TuneIn and many other podcast outlets. And one of the information services we provide to our clients, our listeners, is our Saturday morning wealth conference, where people can carve out 3 hours, Saturday morning, 9 to 12, on focusing on improving your investing skills and knowledge and planning for the future. We think it's pretty important. Our next conference is set up. It's going to be February 7th in San Jose, Saturday, February 7th, San Jose. And we're calling it the upside of lower oil prices, because there are upsides to it. But there's also some downsides. I don't think it's all up.
Yeah. I think it's a complex industry. It's not as simple as, oil goes down and everybody is hurt in the industry.
Or everybody's helped.
Yeah, everybody's helped. And yeah, if oil goes up, now everyone's helped equally as well. It's different shades of gray, I guess you would say. And hopefully we can shed some light on that and give some people some perspective on the industry and how to look at it and all the different players within it.
Yeah, look beyond the headlines that you see. Oh, oil price is going down. Well, who's that helping and who's that hurting? We're going to give you a little background, on it, the economics of oil, OPEC versus the U.S. oil producers versus the world producers, and how politics play in the economic tug of war there, and which countries will benefit, which ones won't, Then we'll look at the average investor and how he can profit from collapsing oil prices, what sectors in the industry you need to be in or to consider. We'll break down the different components. Shell, oil sands, deep water operations, our refineries, drillers, servicers, on and on and on.
Yeah, there's a lot of subsets of the energy industry. There's subsectors that all have their own kind of business dynamics that change with changing oil prices.
Yeah, so we're also going to talk about other commodities. We want to give some attention to those as well. So we'll have that as also in that conference. Registration is open and ready for you at investtalk.com. Here's a way to save some money. You can register online January 24th, and we'll take $10 off the admission price, and the price will then be $35. Normal price is $45 per person, and it'll be $35. And that is at the Hyde House in San Jose, Saturday, February 7th, from 9 to noon. So hope Justin and I can see you there. We'd love to see you. Okay, let's get to the phones right away. Let's get to see we'd like to get the show going. Here's a call from our 24-hour list line. 888-99-CHART is the number. It's ready to catch your question anytime.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Hope you guys are having a great day. Could you explain the importance of earnings per share when looking at dividend payout? Kind of just give me the rundown on how you actually look at earnings per share. I know that's something that you definitely want to increase year of year as the company moves forward. Other than that, I had a question about in particular stock. It was a utility stock, SO Southern Company. Can you give me your opinion about that stock? It seems to pay out a payout ratio. One website I actually got 88% payout. Then another website I got 73%. So can you kind of touch bases on the legitimate of a good site to get a good payout ratio? Thank you and have a great day.
Now, that's a very good question.
Very good.
Payout ratio. We're going to have to explain what that is, but it's very, very important, and we'll do that in context with the company he's calling about, Southern Company.
Yeah, and he's got two different numbers from each site, And they both are probably correct, and I'll tell you why. Well, the 73% is what it was in 2012, which is probably, you know, the last full year that that company had. And then the 88% is trailing 12 months, the last 12 months of operating. So, you know, those numbers are probably both correct. One might be a little old, you know, kind of stale number, and the 88% is an actual more updated number.
So Southern Company is a holding company engaged in generation of electricity in a number of states. Mm-hmm. And payout ratio, what does that mean? Okay, let's take their earnings. Their earnings are going to be $2.87 next year, or this year, 2015. And their yield, dividend yield, is 4.2%. Okay, so the payout ratio is how much of $2.87 is 4.2% of the stock price of $50.
So they pay $2.07 a share trailing 12 months. That's how much they paid out per share. And if they're earning $2.87, you take $2.07 divided by $2.87, and you get the payout ratio. Now, over the trailing 12 months, they've only made $2.34. That number that Steve was saying, that's forward-looking. That's next mm-hmm. year. So you don't know that they're going to raise their dividend, but let's go based on what they have in the last 12 months. And they made $2.34 a share, and they've paid out $2.07 a share in earnings or in dividends. And then if you take that ratio, it's 88%, and which is kind of high. Which is
yeah, I was going to say, what's a good payout ratio? Yeah.
But it is a utility, and they tend to pay out high payout ratios.
Yeah, a normal company good ratio, we like to see it around 60% or less.
Yes.
That, you know, that way they retain earnings so they can grow the company and use that retained earnings for whatever they want.
Well, and in a recession, you know, usually earnings will go down in cyclical companies, right? Most companies are cyclical. So in a recession, earnings go down. And if they have a 60% payout ratio, earnings are going to have to fall 50% or more probably for them to actually cut their dividend or change their dividend payout. Whereas Southern Company is
not cyclical.
Not very cyclical. It's a utility. You know, earnings in 2009 only went down 5 cents a share from 237 to 232. So there wasn't,
because you're going to use electricity.
Yeah, not much fluctuation in earnings. Now you don't have a big earnings growth, but not much fluctuation. So that's why a company like Southern Company Utility can have an elevated payout ratio, and it's really not that concerning.
Okay, great question. SO is the symbol, everybody. So what is all the concern about oil? Why are markets apparently moving up and down based on what oil's doing? The boom and bust of cheaper oil. That's one of our talking points today, and I'll give you a taste of the subject matter for our conference that's coming up. Retail sales. The market moved sharply today, up and down, and was down significantly, but it was a retail sales report. I wanted to talk about it. Why would it move because of that?
Yeah, Walmart was down about 3% on that, which is obviously the largest retailer in the country.
And the Bayes book came out. Do you know what the Bayes book? The Federal Reserve's Bayes book. Do you know what it is? And what did it say? Okay, I want to talk about that. And what do you think the average American pays in lifetime interest?
That's interesting.
The interest payments on all the debt they carry. What do you think? How much do you think it is? I'm not going to tell you until we get to that part. But certain states are the highest and lowest, and I'm going to mention some states as well. Kind of an interesting piece of information, I thought. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But, you know, first we want to talk about what's on your money. We're also, to this hour, going to have something special. We're going to spend a few minutes with Pete the Planner. His name is Peter Dunn, and he's made a name for himself helping people make sense of their money lives, helping them with day-to-day money matters that everyone has to deal with. He's also an acclaimed comedian, believe it or not. So it should be a fun conversation later this hour.
I met Pete at a conference I was at about a month or so ago regarding the 401k space, and he was really good. I liked how frank he was about people spending habits and I think it'll be a good to touch base with him and see what he's seeing in everyday money lives. And, you know, we focus here on investments, and Pete really focuses more on personal finance and how to get your financial house in order before you ever even think about investing.
And speaking of 401k, we met with Stride Sci Functional Fitness, Inc. today. They're our newest client. And Justin and I just wanted to give a shout out to them. They're in Southern California. They do really good work with paraplegics and quadriplegics, and I was quite impressed with what they do. And I think that they have a great business there to help people.
Yeah, and we're excited to help them and make sure that they get to their retirement goals.
Yep. Now, let's go ahead and get to the phones. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us. You can do it right now. And this is Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. Okay, the pros and cons of lower oil prices is going to be the subject of our conference coming up in early part of next month. But you have seen the oil price, barrel of oil price go down sharply over the last, couple, 3 months. And the market is having fits about it, not counting today, which today the market was down 187 points for the Dow. But actually, at one point, I think it was down 360 points mm-hmm. at one point during the day before it made about out. But
oil
before
actually
today,
had a nice little rally to end.
Yeah, I think it was up 6 or 7% today.
Yeah, you see natural gas? Natural gas is up huge today, like 12%.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And the market collapsed today. And struggled back up.
Collapse is a little, you're scaring people. Collapse is a little
extreme. 360 points?
I think
that's pretty collapsey for one day.
It's a couple percent. It's not collapse.
In one day.
This is in 1987.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It went down 20% that one day.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was 508 points. So, yeah. That's a collapse.
That equivalent in today's number would be about what? 1,500 or 2,000? 2,000 maybe points?
More than that. I think it would be
18,000. Yeah. What's 20% of 18,000? 10% of 118.
So that's about 30, I'm looking at the paper here. Steve has it on his desk. It collapsed 22% to 1,700. So, it's about, it'd be about 5,000 points on the day.
Yeah, okay.
One day. So that's a collapse. 300 points compared to 5,000.
We've gotten spoiled because we got used to the low volatility, and now we're having huge volatility. Yeah. But oil has been the driver because one day people think, low oil prices helps consumers, and therefore retailers will do well. And the next day, you got to figure, 20% of the market might be,
Of the bond market, high-yield bond market.
Yeah, the high-yield bond market.
Yeah.
Is related to oil and smaller oil companies.
And if you look at, Jeffrey Gundlach actually pointed this out, if you look at the growth in employment over the past 5 years, the vast majority of it has been in the energy sector. And now all of a sudden, there's clearly going to be layoffs. How much it's going to be is, it's hard to know. Suncor, they announced like 1,000. They're laying off 1,000 people. So there's going to be a lot of layoffs there. And then a lot of the fixed equipment, the investment by large companies has been in the oil industry. So that's obviously going to grind to a halt, at least until oil gets above, $60, $70 a barrel.
And that means that OPEC's plan might be working.
Yeah, it's pretty much working.
You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Pizza with Justin Klein today. Pete the Planner is going to give us some hints on how to talk about money with our spouse. I talk about money with my spouse all the time. She just doesn't want to talk about it. Coming up later this hour, 888-99-CHART. You can reach us right now.
Isn't it kind of risky to invest when public sentiment is so negative? Or what's your question? Ask it right now. 888-99-CHART on Invest Talk. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. When there's a sustained decline in prices for goods and services, the rules of the investing game change. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk podcast. And you can influence the conversation, too. Call our anytime line at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. The phone is our first link with you, and we hope you can use it. We like you to use it 24 hours a day. You can call anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Here's a question that came in before today's program.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. Love your show. Listen to it using iTunes. Question I have about something that many years ago you talked a lot about, which is good old NLY. I know you guys were negative as of about a year ago. I bought it from about 15.5 down to somewhere under 10, and with all the dividends and everything that I've collected, I'm actually way ahead. About two and a half years later. My real question is the company, in your eyes, earning enough to be able to pay the dividend? I know that's kind of an important thing on companies that pay the dividends. I know they've lowered the dividend, the quarterly dividend, from what it was, but I'm comfortable where it is now. In any case, that's basically the question. NLY, is it a good time to get in or hold it or at least not sell? Let me know, and talk to you guys again. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Anley Capital Management, NLY. They are in New York. We've talked about this many times in the past. It's a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. And if you don't know what that is, you can email me or call me. But it's a real estate investment trust, meaning they have to pay 90% of their earnings out in the form of a dividend. They have to pay that out to the shareholders, 90% of their earnings. And then they don't have to pay corporate income tax if they do that. Anyways, it does finances mortgage pass-through certificates and collateralized mortgage obligations, CMOs. Remember those are the problems they had with those in the 2007-2008 financial crisis? Anyways, it's a good, solid company. It's just erratic.
Yeah, and it's just an industry that is erratic. So that's the nature. It's a mortgage REIT. So they don't own particular buildings or property like most REITs do, right? A lot of REITs, they own shopping malls, and maybe they own healthcare facilities or whatever. Annaly just invests in instruments, debt instruments, which are mortgages that are backed by real estate. So their earnings in 2011 went as high as, actually 2009 was the peak, $2.76, and it's kind of been declining ever since. And back in 2009, they paid out $5.54 a share in dividends. And this trailing 12 months, they're down to $1.20. So they've cut their dividend by more than half in the past 5 years.
Now, they have a dividend yield of 11% because the stock prices have come down to $10.53. Mm. So can they pay? He had a question. Can they pay that dividend? 11% of $10.53 is what, $1.20 or so?
$1.20 is what they paid out of the last 12 months, and they're only earning over the last 12 months 81 cents a share. So no, their payout ratio is 150%, meaning that they're paying out far more than they are earning. Now that can happen for a short period of time, but it can't happen for, you know, over the long term. So I would say that dividend is probably going to continue to be cut, especially if their margins start to continue to decline, which they have been. They're the lowest they've been really since 2011. So that's kind of the issue with Annaly, and I would say it will continue to cut its dividend.
Yeah, so be very careful. Let's go to Arish in Santa Clara. How are you doing, Arish?
I'm doing good, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
The question is about Bit Auto. It's BITA, the ticker symbol.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I own this stock, and this has taken a huge beating recently in the last couple of days because of when projected auto sales in China. Actually, by the way, this is a China-based company similar to Cars.com here in the U.S. And I would like to know, what is the future of this stock? Actually, is there a chance for this to come back up, or is it a buying opportunity? I just wanted to find out your opinion on this.
Okay. Bit Auto Holdings Limited out of China, Chinese provider of automobile pricings, specifications, reviews, and consumer feedback. And this is the downfall of all really high growth. This is the danger, I should say, of really all high growth stocks, and more so in China than anyplace else, because it's, you know, a difficult market. The company's growing its earnings 74% this year, 47% next year. That's what they say. Sales are growing, you know, 50-60% the last couple of quarters. That's increased from the quarters before that. And the P/E ratio is 43. They're going to make $1.79 this year, and then $2.63 next year, and it's a $65 stock.
Yeah, the P/E ratio isn't really that out of line with the company growing as fast as they are. The biggest issue with China is this really their numbers? Are these numbers actually true? You know, we've had a lot of issues in the past with a lot of Chinese companies, especially these internet companies, that have fraudulent numbers, and I'm not saying they are, but that's probably one of the reasons why it's not trading as such a high multiple. Now, technically, if you look at the chart, it's been making lower highs and lower lows since about end of August of last year, and now it's right at support. It's at some short-term support, but to me, I think this is probably going to break it and continue lower. How much lower is really hard to know.
Okay, you got Cartha Ball. Bali, if you hold on after the break and after our we talk with our guest, we'd love to take your call. Coming up after the break, personal finance expert Peter Dunn, alias Peter the Planner, will be with us to offer some alternatives to student loans. So stay with us. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Pisa with Justin Klein, and the phone number is 888-99-CHART. Well, we welcome Peter Dunn, also known as Pete the Planner. Peter's an award-winning comedian and award-winning financial mind as well. I guess it takes a little sense of humor, huh, to do what we do. He's the author of 10 books, six of which are featured in the nationwide launch at Barnes & Noble stores in January, now, this month. He is the host of a popular radio show, the Pete the Planner Show, and is a columnist for the Indy Star. Pete has appeared regularly at CNN Headline News, Fox Business, as well as numerous other national syndicated radio shows, TV shows. He's consistently considered one of the top five personal financial experts in the nation. So welcome, Pete. We appreciate you being with us.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Now, before we get to some questions, if you don't mind, on your website, sure. On your website, PeteThePlanner.com, you post what you call alarming facts about financial wellness. Sure. And they are alarming, apparently. You say 35% of Americans have debt in collections. That means people are...
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'll tell you, the number one debt that people ignore... I mean, because obviously sometimes when you go into collections, what I find it's because you've ignored the debt, is medical debt. I find that medical debt today gets people in trouble because they conveniently forget about it. They wish they didn't have the illness, and they wish they didn't have the debt associated with it. And I'll tell you, and you do this work every single day when you're talking to people, they conveniently ignore the medical debt.
Yep.
And what does that typically do to their credit and how much they pay for interest over time?
Yeah, certainly, you know, great point, Justin. I mean, you've got the credit scores are in the tank, which affect their lending rates. But ultimately, too, it's kind of hard to get on with your life if you're ignoring a major problem in your life. And that problem is that you owe someone money and you're completely ignoring it. So I think psychologically it does more damage than it does financially. And by the way, it does a lot of financial damage as well.
Yeah, I have lots of family members that have and are doing that. I have, as I said on the radio many times, I have like 40 nieces and nephews, okay?
Wow.
So I got a number of them having the housing crisis and ignoring their mortgage and doing different things. And they don't want to listen to me. It's just not getting through to them. And that's one of the questions we might, talk about. How do you talk about this subject with family members? How do you break that barrier?
Well, I think to begin, I mean, if you're sharing your finances with someone, so if that family member you're having a discussion with is a significant other, then the first place you start is just to try to get on the same page. And too often, guys, and you know this, you're sitting across from a couple. One person takes care of the money, and the other person is trustworthy, hopefully, of the person in charge of the money. And so I think empathy is needed. You know, conversation starters like, is there something that I'm currently doing in relation to our financial life that stresses you out? That sort of come-to-Jesus meeting with your significant other where you're asking them to judge you. And, of course, guys, at the end of those questions, you get to flip it and say, oh, by the way, can I now answer those about you? Can I now be honest and tell you how I feel?
Yeah, I have my experience when I sit down with a couple is that one is in charge of the finances, and the other one doesn't even want to know.
Yeah, That's so frustrating to me, you know, and I know that's frustrating to professionals like you guys.
Yeah. Especially when I've had this happen to me many times. I don't know, at least a dozen times where the person who is the financial leader of the family passes away. And now the other partner has no clue because they never expressed any interest, doesn't know what to do, doesn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, and they're so unfinancially savvy that they get duped into, you know, bad investments and get bad advice from people that, you know, I don't want to say they're shysters, but they're, you know, they're out for their own good as opposed to the good of the client.
Yeah, that relationship with the financial advisor needs to be, especially if there's two people in a relationship, it needs to be a relationship that exists between all three entities. And guys, I think some of the trends in our industry are leading people this way. You're having more people meet their financial advisors in the workplace, through employers, through retirement plans, and even the retirement plan companies are beginning to cater to this in the sense that formerly, your retirement plan at work or your employer only provided benefits that would benefit your future, you know, your retirement. But now what you're seeing today with financial wellness programming is that you're having resources available in the workplace for couples to work on their past, their debt, and their present. And, you know, that's the bulk of the work I do and a lot of retirement plan companies are doing today.
Okay, very good point. And, you know, I know you've seen the explosion of student loans. We've all seen the explosion of student loans. And this is a tough question because we know with a college education, you have a better future, a brighter future. You're going to make more money. At the same time, the cost and the burden many times falling on the parents is really retarding their ability to save for retirement. That is a tough, tough question.
And just buying a house in general. You know, when you're saddled with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 or more in this long-term debt that you're having to service every month, it's getting harder for young people to really afford a home. So what are some alternatives to piling on this type of long-term debt? Even though it might be cheap long-term debt, it's still debt nonetheless.
Yeah, I think you guys would agree the norm is now student loans. You know, over 70% of students graduated with in excess of $30,000 in student loan debt last year. And
wow.
So the solution is going to be an extraordinary solution, which is to commute. It's going to be to work while you're in school. It's going to be go to cheaper school. And I think, Steve, your point you started with is what this story is going to be about in 2 or 3 years. You know, parent plus loans are the new thing.
Right.
That's what everyone's doing. And no one in the media, except guys like you, are talking about this because that's going to be the bubble, not student loans. Parent student loans are the bubble that no one's talking about.
Yep, it's going to be a problem. It's already a problem. And I just don't think a lot of parents, and what I see when I talk to people is they want to help their kids, which is normal. Everybody wants to do that. But they got to, you know, I have relatives who want to send their kids back east schools, you know, and they really can't afford it. They're ignoring their retirement. And I'm saying, why don't you go to a community college for the first couple of years because you can afford that. Then send them to the – but they don't. It's very difficult. This is very difficult.
Yeah. One of the things that I think that a lot of people have problems with is saving and, you know, being able to save for college and for other things. And, you know, Pete, we met at a One America event last month and who is actually a provider for 401k plans. And it was very interesting to see how frank and forthright you are with people. And you don't beat around the bush. You really get to the point and hit hard at people for their lack of spending control and lack of planning and lack of savings. So can you talk a little bit more about what you see typically from individuals when it comes to their personal finance habits and how it really retards their ability to save and actually get to where they want to be in retirement?
Yeah, I think you guys, we've made this about numbers too much as an industry because our financial lives are about behavior. Mm. You know, when I'm hungry at lunch, sometimes I'm hungry for a triple cheeseburger. And when I take a bite, I am no longer feeling like that was a good decision, but because it satisfies me for a second. Mm. But it's not the right thing to do. And with spending and saving, when you get the money and not food, it's the same darn thing, right? You, you buy something because you want that instant gratification, and then you look down the road and you're like, that was brutal. So I think for a lot of people, it's just to stop making it about numbers. That's why I like my partnership with One America, because even though they're a financial company, what they've been able to do and help advisors do, like you guys, is to say, look, this isn't really about math, guys. This is about behavior. This is about accountability. And just by being realistic and saying, look, we're going to make mistakes, but let's call it what it is. And it's a behavior issue, not a math problem.
Well, that's a great point.
Pete, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate you being with us on Invest Talk here. You can see more about Pete the Planner by visiting his website, PeteThePlanner.com. Best thinking money blog on the internet, it says. Practical money advice. You know we are all about practical money advice here on Invest Talk. But his website, too. He is the same focus. And, of course, look for his books at Barnes & Noble. Pete, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, fellas.
I'm Steve Peasley. Welcome your call next on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Why not sign up to be an Invest Talk insider? It costs you nothing, and it puts you in line for some informational extras, from webinars to special info sheets from Steve. Why not sign up now? It's free on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Crothabolli in Santa Clara. How are you doing? Thanks for waiting, by the way. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. The stock symbol C for Charlie, O for Oscar, P for Paul, COP.
ConocoPhillips.
I would like to know, it is continuously bottoming up. This is the second bottom I see in the last 1 month, around $60. Is it the best price to enter into this stock?
Well, I can tell you that it's at a triple bottom. If you go back a whole year ago, almost a quadruple bottom.
Yeah.
So this is very possible. Let's take a look at some of the fundamentals, though. Remember, this is ConocoPhillips, everybody, engaged in exploration production of crude oil and natural gas in 27 countries. It's a big cap company, $77 billion. These are the kinds of things we're going to talk about at our conference in February, this kind of issue. Now, for instance, they make good money. They made $5.70 a share in 2013. This year, or 2014, $5.59. But next year, they're only going to make $2.91. Thus, the stock price collapsed.
Yeah, you have earnings going down 48%, but you know oil prices went down 48%. Now, on a technical basis, this looks like a good low. And I think oil prices and oil stocks are look poised to rally from here. Now, how far does that rally go? That all depends on how high oil goes, and you know whether it can get back to $60, $70 a barrel and stay there. If it does, you know, this is a great buying opportunity for companies like ConocoPhillips and you know a lot of companies in the oil industry. If it just is a short-term rally, which is possible, it could just be a month or two, 3 months, and then it rolls back over. That's very possible as well. You know, this will ultimately not be that great of a buying opportunity. But at least in the short to medium term, I think this is a good place to get in. It is cheap. Is it the cheapest one in the oil industry? I wouldn't know if I would go that far, but it is pretty cheap at these levels.
Thanks, Crothabolli. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Thank you. That's COP, ConocoPhillips, everybody. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Retail sales report came out today for December, and they were down 0.9%. They expected to be down 0.2%, and this is for December, and that's after it was up in November, 0.4%, okay? But they revised the previous 2 months to be down also. And if you exclude, remember, think about it, this is December we're talking about, the Christmas holiday shopping season.
Now, does this exclude gas prices, gas sales?
No.
No.
Now, if you take, it does not exclude. So, obviously, gas prices came down, and they're part of retail sales.
Yeah, so you would people think, are spending less on gas.
Yeah, so people spending less on gas, therefore, they would have more money to spend elsewhere. However, that isn't what happened.
Yeah.
If you even take out the gas prices, it was down more than expected. Mm-hmm. So people didn't do that.
And if you actually look at history, lower oil prices, yes, it's good for consumer spending, but it needs to stay down there for a long time because most people, they don't react. They don't go, okay, well, oil prices are down, and I'm just going to go spend a ton more because I'm saving all this money. They don't think of it consciously like that. It's more of a longer-term behavioral change. If they see oil prices stay down at these levels, then they're apt to spend more. But in the short term, it's not a very big difference.
And it's kind of a concerning to the market. That's why it had such a huge down day today.
Yeah, and you had Walmart down 3%.
Yeah, because the reason why it concerns the market is because, remember, jobs have been growing. Mm-hmm. More and more jobs. And we're talking about December, and then they revised the previous 2 months for the whole quarter down on retail sales. And we're 66% dependent on consumer spending in our economy. So it was kind of a negative report. It was very disturbing. Let's go to Bill in Petaluma. How are you doing, Bill?
Hello, Justin and Steve. I wanted to get your take on a new ETF. The symbol is HACK, appropriately. It's actually called Pure Funds ISE Cybersecurity ETF. And given the political stir that's recently gone on, I'm wondering what you think of this new ETF.
Okay, it's an exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the ISE Cybersecurity Index. So the idea behind this one is it's a popular idea. There's a lot of you heard about Sony and everybody and the break-in into their systems, and everybody's frightened. So maybe these types of stocks will take off, and that's what it is. I don't know what's in it myself.
If you look at it, the top holding is FireEye. Some of the bigger names that you might recognize are Juniper Networks, Cisco, Symantec. Those are some of the bigger names, but there's also a lot of very small names that most people would not recognize.
Okay, so that's what it's in. I like the concept because I think protecting yourself against it hacking is going to get even bigger and bigger. I think the concept is good. It's hard to know.
Yeah, I don't usually like new IPOs. You know, these new IPOs, usually there's so much hype about them and they're overpriced. So I would keep it on your radar, and in the next recession or bear market, that's when you pick it up. I wouldn't pick it up today.
Thanks for calling, Bill. Appreciate it.
Okay,
have you tried our free risk analysis tool? It's really easy to use. It takes about 5 minutes or less, and it'll give you great insight into how much risk you want to take. Go to investtalk.com. It's free. Free risk analysis.
Distribution of our podcast is made possible by KPP Financial. If there are investing or personal finance topics that you'd like Steve or Justin to explore further on Invest Talk, we're open to your ideas. To get a note to either one, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they'll respond.
888-99-CHART. You're with Steve Peasley and Justin Klein, and you're listening to Invest Talk. We appreciate you being with us. The Bayes book. Do you know what the Federal Reserve's Bayes book is? Justin, do you know what it is?
I know it's not beige.
I wonder why they call it beige.
I don't know, but I know it's not beige.
Anyway, this is a report that the Fed puts out on the various Federal Reserve districts in the United States and the health of the economy of those districts. They use terms in this most recent one that came out today as the same kinds of terms they used before in the last report, modest to moderate economic growth. Modest to moderate. That's
modest
what they use.
To
they had some words of optimism. They felt that it is possible that in 2015 that the economy could shift into a higher growth plateau. They mentioned that, but they didn't. It wasn't. It was just a possibility. The regions that had worries are pretty obvious. How about the Dallas region? And why would they have worries? Well, of course, it's all about oil. They also said that housing was going to be flat for 2015. Flat.
Well, if you look at, I think it was it Toll Brothers or D.R. Horton, I think it was, had a huge, huge drop. And they posted good earnings. This was yesterday.
Yeah, the CEO made a comment.
Made a lot of comments.
Yeah, about that it was soft.
Soft demand and margins being soft. And so the housing market, at least in the new homes, demand is still pretty weak.
And the Bayes book is kind of saying that.
Yeah, and you would think, you know,
lower interest
the housing stocks have been rallying for a couple of reasons. Lower interest rates, right? You have the 30-year downs 3.9
yesterday.
Yeah, something which is back below 4, which I didn't think we were going to quite see that again. I thought maybe we'll dip below a little bit at some point in the next 5-10 years. After it went to what, 4.5.
If we talk about a 30-year fixed mortgage, it was at a little bit more than 4.5 at the high, which was
the very end, beginning of last year, end of 2013.
Exactly. The low was 3.3.
Yeah, and now we're at 3.9.
That was a year ago last May.
Yeah, and then we had the FHA news, which they're lowering their mortgage insurance price. So you saw housing prices rally, but all of a sudden, that's still not helping the housing sector really get on its feet. And I think a lot of it really has to do with the young people, just no new home buyers, or very few, because of all that student debt.
Yep. Let's answer one more question before we're done for the hour. 888-99-CHARGE, how you can reach us anytime. This one's from a podcast subscriber.
Hi, this is Bobby calling, and I have a question about financial ratios. So I've been self-educating myself a lot, and I'm just wondering, basically, if a company has the best financial ratios amongst its competitors, does that company tend to do better? And why would I invest in any company that has poor financial ratios compared to its competitor? All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a good question. And I wish it was that easy to invest.
Yeah, and he's talking about financial ratios. I think there's a lot of different kinds. Are you talking about like P ratios, or is he talking about margin ratios?
Or price to sales, or price to earnings, or price to
price to free cash flow. I mean, there's
return on equity, return on assets.
I think his problem is he's trying to simplify it. It's not nearly that simple. There could be companies that have very low gross margins and compared to their competitors, and they do great, and their stock price does great. Think of Amazon. Amazon has extremely low margins, but they do so much massive amount of sales that their stock has been doing great lately. But over the longer term, it has been doing great, even though they have low margins. And so some companies, they have low margins for a reason. That's their goal in the market. That's their niche. But then there's other companies that have huge margins, like Apple, compared to their competitors, because they're the premium brand. And they can do better, but maybe they're not going to grow as fast as the cheaper brand.
On a basic level, to answer your question, of course you want to invest in the better companies.
Yeah.
Okay? The answer is yes. You're best in the better companies.
Yeah,
but there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, it's not
that
simple.
I wish it was that simple. Yeah, just isn't.
That'd be great.
Good call, though. Thank you. Before we close for the hour, you can always see my latest checkup dates posted right there on InvestTalk.com. Those are checkup dates where I meet with individual people. And I want to thank Pete the Planner for talking to us today. You can contact him at PeteThePlanner.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Pizza with Justin Klein today. On behalf of everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.